morning. The Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection will come to order on Tuesday, March 15th, 2011. Members, we have two bills on our agenda this morning, and we don't quite have a quorum yet in the committee, but as soon as we do, I'll announce that. But I wanted to get started on the testimony. The first bill up, and actually I should say this, there was a piece of paper just handed out that doesn't say who it's from, but was this, do you know who this was from? It was distributed by Health Partners in support of the bill, is what I assume. So it's a, the flyer you have, just so you know, this was distributed by Health Partners in support of Senator Hand's bill. Senator Hand, if you want to come up and join us and present Senate File 646 for us today. Good morning and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members. Appreciate your time this morning. Senate File 646 is a bill that was brought to me by a constituent who works in the insurance area, and the purpose is to ensure that there's a level playing field for coverage in the marketplace, prevent a loss of general fund dollars, and to give the legislature an opportunity to weigh in on what I believe is a significant policy issue. Over the past year or so, there's been a trend to move public employees into the public employee insurance program away from the private marketplace. And the impact of this happening has been significant. PEEP, which is the Public Employee Insurance Program, does not pay the premium taxes and assessments required of commercial plans. And so a full-scale move of teachers or other public employees to PEEP would result in a hole in the general fund and a burden on small businesses to make up the difference in payments to support the high-risk pool, MCHA. In the past, the legislature has addressed the issue of pooling school employees with bills that require the proposed pools to compete on a level playing field with commercial plan options. And like this bill, those proposals included requirements to pay into the state's high-risk pool, pay premium taxes, and offer the same consumer protections as fully insured plans. These were important provisions, were designed to prevent cost shifts to small employers and individuals in the fully insured market. So Senate File 646 would establish a level playing field by requiring all public entities entering PEEP to pay the same taxes and assessments and abide by the same consumer protection statutes as they currently do in the fully insured market. So the reason I'm bringing this bill forward is essentially three reasons. Number one, insurance pools for public employees should not be established without policymakers, without the legislature having a chance to examine this and weigh in on what is, I think, a significant policy decision. Secondly, state government should not provide incentives to individuals who are currently privately insured to move into a government-run pool that is essentially being subsidized at the expense of small businesses and individuals. If we continue to shift more cost onto the private market, it will endanger job creation, make it even more difficult for small businesses and individuals in the fully insured market to find affordable insurance products. So if this bill is not passed, the state's general fund stands to lose millions of dollars in the loss of premium taxes currently being paid in the commercial market. Now, I've got two testifiers here in support of Senate File 646, Catherine Commit from the Council of Health Plans and Lisa Bodine from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. But just let me walk you quickly through the structure of the bill. Section 1 is a conforming change to provisions later in the bill, also requires a claims reserve of at least 2 months. Section 2 eliminates PEEP's exemption from certain health insurance and competitive bidding requirements and requires PEEP to pay MCHA assessments. Premiums received from groups covered by PEEP before May 1st, 2011 continue to be exempt from the MCHA assessment as long as the groups maintain continuous coverage in PEEP. So this is not looking back and affecting people who are currently enrolled in the PEEP program. Sections 3 and 4 define PEEP as a contributing member of MCHA. Section 5 imposes the insurance premium tax of 2% on PEEP. Groups covered before May 1st, 2011 continue to be exempt from the tax so long as they maintain continuous coverage in PEEP. And then Section 6 is a conforming change. So that is the structure of the bill. That is the purpose of the bill, why I am here today, and would certainly invite testimony from Ms. Commit and Ms. Bodine.
Welcome, Ms. Commit. And Ms. Bodine, if you could please, you know the drill, state your names and who you represent for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Catherine Kmit from the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, and I do have a handout that I'd like to distribute.
Okay, Senator Ryan, do you have a question now, or did you want to wait?
Whenever you want to take questions, Mr. Chairman.
Let's hear the testimony first, Senator Reinert, and then we'll ask questions. And I think he's only has two people presenting testimony.
So as this document is coming around, Mr. Chairman, let me just state again that my name is Catherine Kmit, and I represent the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, which is a trade group that represents the 7 nonprofit health plans here in Minnesota. The council supports Senate File 646, and we view this bill as an issue of fairness. To provide some context, I've distributed a copy of the pie chart that shows where Minnesotans get their coverage. Most Minnesotans receive their health care coverage through their employer. Employer-sponsored health care takes two forms, typically fully insured and self-funded. The fully insured coverage means a premium is paid to the health insurance company and the insurance company pays the claims. The employer's financial responsibility then is limited to the premiums charged, regardless of how much care is used by the employees in that group. This is called transferring risk. The insurance company takes the risk, not the employer. Fully insured coverage is regulated by both the state of Minnesota and the federal government, and about one quarter of all Minnesotans are covered by fully insured products, and typically small to medium-sized employers offer fully insured products to their employees. So on this graphic, you'll see these are the latest numbers from the Department of Health, just came out last week. In the top right corner, about 25.3% of the population, these are 2009 numbers, the latest numbers available, are in fully insured products. The rest of the state of Minnesota, most are in private self-funded or self-insured plans, and then the others are in Medicare, state public programs, and then a portion of the population is uninsured. Let me just talk a little bit about self-funded coverage, which means the employer pays for all of the cost of the medical claims from the company's own revenues. And instead of paying an insurance premium, self-funded employers take the risk and fund the claim themselves. Typically, large employers self-fund coverage, and that includes Minnesota's State Employee Insurance Group plan, CGIP, as well as PEEP. Self-funded coverage is regulated by the federal government and is exempt from state insurance and health plan regulations. About 40% of Minnesotans are covered through self-funded plans. Self-funded employers often hire local health plans or other third-party administrators to administer the benefits, meaning the health care card that each individual employee receives looks similar to the cards issued to people with fully insured coverage. Often employees do not know the difference between self-funded and fully insured coverage. Employers who provide self-funded coverage have greater flexibility in determining what is covered than employers who purchase fully insured coverage. And, of course, the cost of that coverage can actually be less because the self-funded groups do not pay the state health care taxes or the MCHA assessment, which can add several percentage points to the premium. So this legislation being brought forward today will ensure fairness across the fully insured market and state health insurance programs such as PEEP. As Senator Hahn indicated, PEEP does not pay the premium taxes and assessments required of the commercial plans. So moving all of these public employees into PEEP will create losses for the general fund. And on this point, I think it's important for the committee to know that we've done some preliminary analysis with an actuarial firm. And based on that analysis, we estimate that the loss to the general fund, if this bill does not pass, could range as much as $16 to $17.5 million. So we think that it would create a hole in the general fund without replacing these taxes that now go to the general fund as well as to pay for the MCHA assessment. The rising cost of health care coverage is a real issue for small employers, and shifting more of the cost to them can have real consequences. So what I'm saying by that is that these taxes, especially the MCHA assessment, will have to continue to be paid, but instead of it being paid on a broader segment of this fully insured piece of the pie, that piece of the pie is going to shrink, and therefore the taxes are going to be weighted more heavily on their premiums. This does have consequences, and in fact, small employers have had to make difficult choices about whether to continue providing health insurance coverage to their employees. In fact, the Department of Health has reported that in 2009, more than 42,000 people lost small group coverage, that's groups of 2 to 50 employees, bringing the total drop in small group coverage to over 82,000 people since 2004. This bill requires a level playing field so all the school districts and other municipalities will have the same consumer protections and pay the same taxes and assessments as they were when they were in the fully insured market. And we encourage your support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. And also, I'd just like to announce that we do have a quorum present. Ms. Bodine.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, I'm Lisa Bodine with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'm the policy manager for health and transportation. As many of you know, the Minnesota Chamber represents approximately 2,600 businesses, and 70% of those fall with under 50 employees. So I'm wearing that hat today, speaking to you. We support Senate File 646, a bill which would require that people that join the public employee insurance program pay the same taxes and assessments as they currently do in the fully insured market. I'll do my best not to cover much of what Catherine Commit already covered, but I do think it's important to note the following, that the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association assessment for the state's high-risk pool is currently only paid by that fully insured market, by that 25%, which for the most part is made up of small businesses, self-employed, and individual policyholders. And according to the state and federal laws, the public programs and the self-insured groups are not required to pay these taxes and assessments. The remaining fully insured market does represent only the 25% of the pie that Catherine Commit did show the committee. And this percentage has continued or has declined in the past years and is projected to continue to decline, therefore requiring that that market bear a disproportionate share of the burden of assessments and mandates. If more people move into PEEP, commonly referred to, the MCHA assessment on the remaining groups in the fully insured market will increase, and this will absolutely drive up the cost of insurance for small businesses. It will make it more difficult for employers to maintain coverage for their employees, therefore making it more difficult to expand, retain jobs. And we know that insurance is a recruiting and retention tool for businesses, especially in that small market. This is a very important issue for us. When the state exempts itself from these types of taxes, we believe it creates an unlevel playing field for the fully insured businesses. We also believe that it divorces the state from feeling the burden and the pressures that are placed on the private sector in these types of situations. And Senate File 646 would help level the playing field in this respect, and we thank Chairman Han for bringing this forward.
Thank you. I think we had some questions. I know I have several, and Senator Reinert had one. Why don't you lead us off, Senator Reinert?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my first question is, can anyone give us sort of the background on the creation of PEEP, the need we were feeling? And I'm particularly interested in why we did the tax incentives. I mean, we always incent things here, and we have a reason we do that, and then we look back and we wonder why we did that. So I don't know that history.
Is there anybody here from PEEP that could give us a little background on it so we know where we're going? Welcome to the committee.
Yeah, where we've been. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nathan Morocco, and I'm director of the Employee Insurance Division, which is housed in Minnesota Management and Budget. In that role, I oversee two programs, one for state employees and the PEEP program that we're talking about now, the Public Employee Insurance Program. To your question about PEEP, so PEEP was created in the late 80s. The first groups that came into PEEP were 1990, was the first policy that was issued. Currently, there are 61 local units of government, including 21 school districts and 32 cities and townships, and we have revenue or premiums of about $34 million. 1987 predates me. I think at the time there were a couple different pools that were created. One would have been the public employee insurance program. There was also one for the private sector referred to as MEEP. MEEP no longer exists, but that did run for 5 or 6 years before ultimately it did collapse. I think that, you know, the intent was a place for small local units of government who didn't have necessarily the wherewithal that perhaps a larger group like the one you all participate in, CGIP, has, where you can put a lot of resources and get some economies of scale. So it was a place for these local units to come together, probably not unlike some other kinds of entities, perhaps like a cooperative might be. Same philosophy that if you want to buy pencils in bulk or if you want to buy certain kinds of administrative services in bulk, you can do that by coming together in certain ways that allow for better efficiencies than you can as an individual. So I think that's the largest, probably the main thrust for it. Just maybe one other piece is that I don't think there was necessarily an intent to create a tax incentive. What PEEP does is it follows whatever other incentives currently exist. And that would be for folks that want to self-insure, they can self-insure. And in the self-insured arena, there is a, in general. So whether you are 3M and you want to self-insure or Target, or even in the public sector, you probably have large entities like Hennepin County just recently self-insured. So by doing that, then you are able to save on some of the expenses of the program. So it wasn't specifically carved out to be exempted from taxes. It just simply operates like any other self-insured program.
Right. Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's the trigger for enrollment in PEEP? It's a legislative trigger, is it not? Senator Hanson.
Mr. Morocco?
Mr. Chair and Senator, essentially any public entity that is interested in the program can approach us and request a quote, and we will give any public entity a quote. We're required to do that, and then if they're interested in taking that quote, they can come into the program. If they want to get multiple quotes and you know, get one from Health Partners and from the cooperatives and from Blue Cross, they can get as many quotes as they want and pick whichever one is best.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Reiner.
Is the thank you, Mr. Chairman. The definition of public entity, is it confined to a municipality or a school district? Or can it be a nonprofit? I mean, what's the definition of a public entity?
Mr. Chair and Senator, it is pretty broad. I don't have the statute in front of me now, but essentially it wouldn't likely be a not-for-profit, but it would be any city, county, school district. It could be a fire or police department as well.
And one last question, Mr. Chairman, if that's okay.
Yes, go ahead, Senator Reiner.
Thank you. Senator Hahn, and just so would it be fair to say that your rationale is that creating this special niche is not really needed anymore, that the market provides products that local units of government maybe couldn't get back in the 1980s but are able to get now at a reasonable cost?
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman and Senator Reinert, I think the issue is you've got people who are being insured in the private marketplace. One of the incentives, I believe, to move to PEEP would be to perhaps get a better structure because of the difference in the kind of assessments that are put on the policy. If you have a PEEP plan, then you do not pay those assessments. And so the effect is to bring more people into the public plan. I think that's not necessarily healthy for the private insurers, and as was pointed out, the more that you bring attraction to move people over, it puts increasing pressure on the folks that remain to fund things like MCHA, and I think that's something that we should be concerned about. I think that to continue to expect the guaranteed insurance pool that MCHA represents to be funded by a smaller and shrinking number of people in the private insurance market, eventually that's going to become very problematic.
I'm sorry, one follow-up, and
that's
then
okay.
I'll be done. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No problem.
So just to dive into that a little bit deeper, if a school district or city were to do this on their own, they would have the same advantages by current tax law. So is the concern that they're banding together sort of with state support, and that is undermining some of the other things that we're trying to do on the healthcare front?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Reiner, I don't know that they're banding together. I don't know that there's any, I'm not suggesting any kind of a conspiracy, but as I understand it, they're certainly free to, as Mr. Morocco pointed out, get quotes from and move to the public plan. All we're suggesting is by this bill, it would make the options even, or you'd have the same, what you'd be competing on really then would be the kind of policy and the true cost of the policy and the tax considerations that are currently a part of the private plans would be also included in the public plan.
Okay. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was presenting a bill in another committee, so I missed the earlier part of the testimony. one of the concerns when I heard about this is that the self-insured, you know, continue not to pay this assessment, and so it isn't a level playing field one way or another. Is there any way to get around that, to have some access so that everybody is paying the same premium tax?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonhoff, I think that is an idea that has been floated. I've certainly heard it in the few months I've been in the HHS committee. I think people have talked about trying to fund MCHA, for example, on a relatively small and perhaps shrinking number of private market insurers. I think that to expand the idea to the entire self-insured market is certainly beyond the scope of what my bill proposes. But people have contemplated that, I think, in the past, and I think that would be something that should be, if we're going to go that route, would have to be discussed in a committee. And I don't know of any bills that are proposing that currently.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonhoff, if I could just add, one of the reasons why the self-funded market is so large and is growing is because this portion of the market is protected under the federal ERISA law. So ERISA prevents states from being able to assess any taxes or any state regulation and taxes on those products that are covered through federal ERISA. So until Congress acts, the state really doesn't have any jurisdiction to make any changes to that portion of the market.
Well, Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, I am aware of that, but I wondered if there wasn't another way to get at it that isn't a tax, you know, if there's a different component that could be. So I do understand that. It just seems to me then we're just continuing to put a burden on one group while the other's increasing, and so the burden gets to be pretty harsh for the group that's paying it. And I know, for example, my school districts are self-insured, so I would assume they'll stay self-insured. But again, it's just, while we say this is to level the playing field, it actually doesn't, because we have this larger group that is being shielded from this.
If you'd stay, I have a question. If I could ask, what on the chart here, where does PEEP fit in on this chart? Which category? It's not fully insured, and it's not an ERISA plan. And
Mr. Chairman, it would fall under the category of the private self-insured plans, because right now PEEP does not pay the taxes and assessments.
I see. Okay, so it's in that category. Okay, thank you. I have a question, actually, and a little bit of explanation, too, so committee members understand kind of the jurisdiction of what we're talking about today, because we're talking about both PEEP and we're talking about MCHA. PEEP is a state government program, and that is being handled in the state government committee, Senator Perry's committee. However, Senator Hahn, your bill, the reason it's here is because of the MCHA piece. And the MCHA piece, of course, is what we are concerned about, maintaining the viability of that program. And so there's been several bills that have introduced, and I see that Senator Dames was able to finish presenting your bill and is back, and I'm glad you are, because you and I've had a conversation about this, about PEEP in general, and you have a bill in that deals with PEEP as well, and that currently is in the state government committee. This bill was referred here, so we're hearing it first. Ultimately, I think these bills dealing with the issue of PEEP and its purpose are going to have to be settled in that committee. But what we're looking at today is the overlap of MCHA, and should the MCHA assessments apply to this? That's what the question before us today is. Senator Dames, did you want to discuss this at all? Did you have any questions or statements you wanted to make about PEEP in general?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One concern I do have is that, and I do believe that, and I will support the bill, my concern is I don't want this to send the message that we're opening up PEEP as to be competitive and to be a part of the marketplace. I want to see PEEP kept for what it was originally designed for, and that was kind of for insurance of last resort in the group market. So with that said, I will support the bill, but we need to keep it as it was originally designed.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, please forgive me. I came in late. I was meeting with some constituents, and I think Mr. Morocco may actually have just said this, but I was reading and trying to understand what I was reading. Is it correct that CGIP pays the MCHA surcharge or the tax? I think it is, but which is the state employee group.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid, no, the CGIP program, because it is self-insured, it would operate in a similar fashion. We do not pay the MCHA premium or the other premium taxes as well.
Okay.
Yes.
I think, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, what threw me was, I guess, I'll bet that that's the MEEP, Minnesota Employees Insurance Program, not CGIP. Okay, I'm sorry. For some reason, I thought that we cover the mandates. We do the mandates even though we don't have to. We do that. But I thought we did this too, but we don't. So, okay.
Mr. Chair and Senator, just for clarification, when you're talking about mandates, we do cover the coverage mandate. So if it's a mandate about certain kind of treatments, those we are following. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Bonner?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hans, why would you not do the same thing with CGIP that you're doing with PEEP?
Senator Hamm.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonhoff, I think that is a little different structure. Is currently in place. It's kind of the same reason why we're not taking people currently in PEEP and asking them to pay an assessment. We're not trying to change the game for people who are currently enrolled in a plan. We're just saying prospectively going forward that we think this makes sense.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, just a little clarification is off of something Senator Gerlach had. So this is a state-run, I'm not one of the licensed insurance dealers in here. This is a state-run self-insured plan. It's not subject to MNCHA and the premium tax. Is it comply, and you mentioned mandates, does it comply with the state mandates then? Is it subject to those mandates?
Mr. Chair and Morocco. Senator, yes, for all intents and purposes, it really operates like any other plan, even though its construct is based on legislative authority. It does purchase products in the same way that any other 3M or Target or Wells Fargo might purchase. We utilize the same health plans that the CGIP uses, so we're utilizing Health Partners and Preferred One and Blue Cross. We're paying market rates. We're not setting rates or anything like that. Typical things that might be more typical in a Medicaid or maybe perhaps a true public program entity might be engaged in. We're really operating in more of a market environment. We're just allowing these folks are allowed to come in and just pool themselves together for efficiency purposes.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair, if I could just mention a couple things.
Certainly.
As it relates to the MSHA. And I think Senator Hahn said it best. Certainly, this is a policy decision. The state itself, while we run this pool, it is not for state employees. It is for local units of government. So whatever is assessed within this group is going to fall to the local unit. So from that perspective, the state is not necessarily engaged in that sense. Other than to the extent that that Senator Hahn indicated that there should be a certain reserve requirement. We certainly would not dispute that. Not sure that we would agree it should be in statute, but currently we're well reserved beyond the 2 months that the senator had indicated, would be appropriate. Not sure that it necessarily needs to be legislatively mandated. But coming back to the principles of the MSHA, I think as Senator Doms had mentioned that it's the insurer of last
Mr.
resort.
Chairman?
Senator Scheid. Oh, sorry, Senator Rest.
Senator Thompson needs to know that lobbyists may not speak to him at the hearing table.
Oh, if you could please, if any conversations, just please step back from the table. Okay, thank you, Senator Rest.
Thank you,
Mr. Markle,
Chair.
Please continue.
So, just as it pertains to MSHA, which is the insurer of last resort, or I should say, the reference to PEEP was the insurer of last resort. I think those same kinds of comments are made about the MSHA program. We, in essence, act like a high-risk pool and an insurer of a last resort. It is a guaranteed issue. If a group wants to come into PEEP, we will give them a quote and we will insure them. We will underwrite them and we will allow them to come into the group. I'm not an insurance expert when it comes to MSHA, but my understanding is that the MSHA pool really is there for the risk that is moved from within the health plans off into a separate entity, which would be the MSHA pool. In order to then pay for that, then those health plans are being assessed a tax to help fund that. We don't have that opportunity. Again, as a insurer of last resort and as a guaranteed issuer, we are not, or nor do we have the ability to move any group from the PEEP program into an MSHA-like pool. It's not uncommon for PEEP to have groups that come in that are quite heavily burdened in terms of what they're paying in premiums. We had a Minnesota city in the north center part of the state who's currently family premium coming into the group at their experience level would be $33,000 for family coverage per year. We have another group that's coming in that's in the south central part of the state, and their family premium would be about $28,000 a year. This isn't uncommon for groups to be coming into the PEEP program. I mean, really, if they were a more typical kind of entity, they would be much more attractive to the health plans. I think they would find much better products and probably better pricing out there, from the health plans directly. Certainly, they have a lot of robust programs that are out there and can do some great things for these local units of government. But there are groups that really do struggle, and that I think somebody had asked about the intent. That was the intent of PEEP. It was a place for these people to come in and help share some of this burden, really get them on their feet, and then it's not uncommon for those folks then to leave us sort of once they become stabilized. The other thing that I would mention is that there's nothing that predicates any group from coming into the PEEP program as being fully insured. They very well may be self-insured already coming into PEEP. I think there's an assumption that because they're small or because they're a local unit, they are going to be fully insured. That's not the case. There are lots of school districts. There are lots of counties, Hennepin County, St. Paul Schools, Rochester, Bloomington Schools. I mean, these Minnetonka, these folks are already self-insured. They very well may want to come into the PEEP program. So the only thing that I would advise is that you would be essentially assessing a mandate and a tax on groups that aren't currently taxed today. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any of the questions.
Okay. I have a question for Senator Hahn and maybe with your experience, Mr. Morocco, and that is the reserve requirement equal to 2 months' claim costs. Are reserve requirements normally stated in those terms? I thought normally it's a percentage of assets or claims or something like that, not necessarily a time frame. What is the standard practice for stating reserves in legislation? Do you have any idea?
Mr. Chair, in my experience, it can be stated either way. We actually use both methods. When we talk about the CGIP program, we reserve at 16.7% or 2 months of claims, which is really the same thing.
Okay.
And I think reserve requirements really fluctuate depending on the size of the organization. So an organization like CGIP, which is 120,000 lives, they can be lower. They can be more at the 16%. This is less than 5,000 lives. So, we're closer to the 30%+ range currently within the PEEP program. So, we're going to have much less risk tolerance on a PEEP program because of the size.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Scheid?
Maybe Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Gazelle got a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Morocco, just a couple of quick questions. Is there a minimum number of people in a group that can come into that into PEEP?
Mr. Chair and Senator, no. We actually have groups of one in the program.
Okay. And follow up, Mr. Chair. As far as the coverage, is it a standard coverage package, and is that something that, if it is, that we can see?
Mr. Chair and Senator, yes, I'd be happy to share that with the committee. Essentially, what we have in the PEEP program, we converted about 3 years ago to offer the PEEP entities the exact same program that we all have as state employees, which includes you as legislators. So if you're familiar with your current insurance program, that is one of the offerings that we do provide for the PEEP folks. Recognizing, however, that there needs to be a broader range of offerings because, as I mentioned, if you've got somebody who currently has $33,000 worth of family premium, they're probably not going to be able to afford the fairly comprehensive program that we all enjoy here in the state program. So we take the same principles of that state program, the tiered networks. Certainly both programs are following all state mandates, the real emphasis on health and wellness, but then we offer sort of a gold, silver, platinum version. So we offer an HSA compatible. It's more of a catastrophic plan. Still has the concepts of tiering, but you're talking about much higher upfront deductibles. And then we would have one in the middle. So a group coming in can choose to make all three available to their members, or if they really want a comprehensive plan, or if they want to minimize their costs as an employer, they perhaps could take the HSA plan. Those are all things that are negotiated at the local level.
Senator Scheid.
No, Mr. Chairman, do you have other people to testify? I was going to move the bill.
We don't have anybody on the list for proponents, but I'm going to ask for any other proponents, but also anybody who is in opposition to the bill will have time for that as well. So there is still more coming.
Chairman, I was
going to
move the bill.
Okay, when the time comes, okay. I'll certainly we'll call on you to make that motion, Senator Scheid.
And, Mr. Chairman, I request a roll call.
A roll call. Okay. Senator Rest has requested a roll call. Senator Hand, then, do you have other testifiers in support of your proposal?
Mr. Chairman, not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Well, let me ask, is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak in favor of Senator Hand's bill? I'll hold on for a moment, see if that's a yes or a no.
Mr. Chairman, and I did speak with the acting director of MCHA. They do support the bill. But I don't think they're in the room currently. They were here earlier.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to Senator Hand's bill? Salzweiger, welcome to the committee.
No. Making a habit of meeting at the...
Good morning.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Hand and I are becoming good friends at the table. And we do enjoy each other's company, and we have a very good relationship, so that's very good. I'm really, Education Minnesota is opposed to this bill. But I'm really...
If you could state your name and
I'm sorry.
For the
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota. Education Minnesota is opposed to this bill. But I really have to thank Senator Hand for bringing this bill forward, because it really will highlight the unlevel playing field that this bill would create. And thank you to the senators for bringing that up. Related to MCHA, currently, any group that's self-insured doesn't have to pay the MCHA. CGIP doesn't have to pay it. The service co-ops do not have to pay it. PEEP does not have to pay it. We had... A couple of groups, Bloomington School District went in last year, or 2 years ago, became self-insured. They didn't have to pay it. Hennepin County became self-insured. They didn't have to pay it. So what is the impetus of this bill? Education Minnesota, in the past has tried to do this very briefly, the statewide health insurance pool, mandatory, and the legislature told us, make it voluntary, make it competitive. So that's what we did. 2/3 of our districts are now seeking bids from PEEP. It's voluntary. There's competition. In PEEP and CGIP, they put out bids to insurance companies, and they, award the bids to particular insurance companies. I'm not an expert on that process. Competition. It's voluntary. Now, as a result, we see this bill so that any of our school districts that do go into PEEP would be charged this assessment. I think you need to ask yourself, if the others don't pay it, why would we be singling out the teachers, the school employees? Maybe it's a good discussion to have about who should pay MCHA. I think a vote for this bill is a vote against the school employees that have the $33,000 premium if it was a school district, and he's nodding his head, yes. or $23,000 or $28,000. You guys, we need help. Our teachers make $26,000, $33,000. $33,000 is the average starting salary. And a family with $33,000 family premium? Seriously, we need help. The other bill was vetoed three times. So we went to voluntary. We went to competition. Service co-ops wouldn't have to pay this. Ask your teachers in your districts what they're paying for premiums. Our school employees are often writing a check at the end of their pay period to pay for their insurance premiums. They don't take home any money from their check. Those are generally the secretaries, the custodians, and teachers. It is not unusual for them to have a $12,000, $18,000 premium. We had one district, Duluth. They had a mid-teens quote for insurance premium increase. They decided to go get a bid from PEEP. I believe their PEEP bid was 6% increase. Health Partners came back to them and said, we'll match it. And the district said, nope, we're going to PEEP. And that's what started it all. We just found out next year's Duluth PEEP bid increase minus 6.6%. Hallelujah. Competition, voluntary. You can't take this away from the teachers after we have tried and tried to get premiums down. There is no benefit for Education Minnesota. This is all about a voluntary approach, a competitive approach to get teachers to be able to afford insurance. We're talking wage freezes here. And do you know that next July 1st, teachers' contributions to pensions will increase? We agreed to do that to help with pension fund. And now we're going to say that the teachers are the ones, and I know it doesn't say just teachers, but it's because of this. The teachers are going to have to pay EMCHA when the service co-ops don't have to. CGIP doesn't have to. The existing PEEP people don't have to. This would be singling out school districts. It's why this bill is here. Please do not support this bill. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Hey, questions from committee members. Senator Chamberlain.
Can we clarify this bill and PEEP is not just for school teachers, correct? And just as reference, my wife pays about 20% of her salary into benefits in 401 and health care. It went up 10% in the private sector for our self-insured. So it's a leap, I think, to connect this to simply teachers joining PEEP. It applies to everybody, all those local communities, small units of government, who join PEEP and not just school districts and teachers. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Senator Chamberlain, I agree 100%, and I think I stated that, but I think the impetus for this is because of that. And it would have a big impact on the bids that they get from PEEP.
Salzberger, I have a question. You mentioned about the voluntary nature or the principle of the voluntary. Does this bill make does this diminish this concept of the voluntary nature by any means? I mean, is in the pursuit of the voluntary nature of the school insurance, does this bill diminish that in any way?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, no, it doesn't. Okay. It doesn't. I was just kind of referring to, the process because of what the objections last year and what we're trying to do, and now there's a roadblock that is, not a roadblock, but a, it's a bumpy road when you're going to have an uneven playing field.
Okay, okay. And then you mentioned that two-thirds of the school districts are currently seeking bids from PEEP. What did you mean by school districts? Is this a school board? Is this the teacher, the bargaining unit? Is it, who exactly seeks these bids from PEEP when you say school districts?
Mr. Chair, that's a good question. It is school employee groups. It might be the teachers. It might be school, a larger group. It is. It's not the district. The law is that the employee group can go to seek a bid.
Okay. All right. So, okay. And then I have a question for Senator Hand. If two-thirds of the school districts are there seeking bids from PEEP, I mean, it's a large number. I think that's what's put this on the radar screen of people's concerns. If there's that much of a migration, say that all of that is moved over, what happens to MCHA? Because that's the concern of this committee is the viability of MCHA as a high-risk school for individuals and the viability of that. What happens to MCHA if there's a mass migration to PEEP?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I think that's a little uncertain. It really depends on who is migrating. I think one of the testifiers earlier mentioned that that there's estimates that it could be significant, I think it was about $20 million in lost revenue. I think it depends on who's migrating. I think that really is the issue. If they're migrating from a private insurance market to PEEP, then there would be a loss of revenue that would affect MCHA.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, so if there's a $20 million loss, is that made up? Is it the assessed back to the smaller and smaller group? Or,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazelka, my understanding of MCHA, yes, it would be reassessed back to the private insurance market. So it would result in having a larger burden placed on a fewer number of policies.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn, I would have voted for this bill if it had CGIP in it also, because I just, that's philosophically where I'm at. I think it's a great idea. I wouldn't mind paying the provider tax as part of my bill, and I think that it's, we ought to. I mean, we ought to shoulder the burden that we're asking the rest of the state. Why should public or state employees be shielded from paying something that we think everybody ought to pay for? So I would... you know, you probably have the votes. I'm not going to vote for it because I want CGIP in it. If you would reconsider, I would I'd be a strong supporter.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonhoff, as I said, this really is not directed at CGIP and as it's prospective in nature. I'm not necessarily opposed to your thought. I think that there are some things that we may need to do to reform CGIP, and there are some ideas out there, but... I think it really is beyond the scope of what we're trying to do here. So,
okay. Other questions? Senator Scheid.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my motivation for supporting the bill has to do actually with the unlevel playing field that Ms. Allswiger referenced, and it's an uneven playing field today. And MCHA is so vital, and MCHA premiums are not cheap. I mean, if anybody knows anybody who's on MCHA, they have some pretty hefty premiums that they're paying. And in many cases, it can be people with disabilities who don't have the kinds of income that can support much in the way of rate increases. So this is an issue all around. And I, for some reason, I thought that CGIP was on it. And I don't disagree with Senator Bonoff. And I think we have to level the playing field until we can get our arms around the ERISA issue. I mean, I don't know that we can, but it certainly creates, that's what mostly creates the uneven playing field. I don't know if you had an amendment, Senator Hand, to the bill before I came in. I didn't see any here. I'm going to move that Senate File 646 be recommended to pass and re-referred to state government.
State Government Innovation and Veterans.
Okay, I meant all that.
Title of the committee. We have a problem when we can't remember the names of the committees because they're so long, but at any rate. Okay. The bill has been moved. Let me ask one final time if there's anybody in the audience that would like to testify in favor of or in opposition to this bill. Seeing none, committee members, do you have any further questions? Then a roll call being requested. The secretary will take the roll, and the chairman votes aye.
Senator Bonoff.
No.
Senator Brown.
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yes.
Senator Dames.
Yes.
Senator Gazelka.
Aye.
Senator Jungbauer.
Yes.
Senator Cruz.
Yes.
Senator Pappas.
No.
Senator Reinert. Senator Rest.
No.
Senator Scheid.
Yes.
Senator Sparks. Senator Thompson.
Yes.
Senator Vandeveer.
The votes being 9 in favor and 4 opposed, the motion prevails, and the Senate File 646 is recommended to pass and is re-referred to the Committee on State Government Innovation and Veterans.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Looks like a 7. I went like this. Okay, members, and next item on the agenda is Senator Gazelka. Good morning, Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And you have Senate File 590 before us. Please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is before you. I was afraid it wasn't going to be, and now it is again. I think it's fairly simple, but we also will probably have a little more tweaking to do as it moves along. But Senate File 590 updates two areas of our insurance laws to recognize how business is conducted today, primarily electronically. Consumers increasingly choose to do business that way. Certainly I've seen that in my own practice as well. But Section 1 amends the currently required written notices regarding the Minnesota Insurance Guaranteed Association to authorize the notice to be given in the same medium as the application for insurance. The bill doesn't change any other provisions of current law, including what must be disclosed. Jumping down to Section 3, that's very similar, makes the same changes as Section 1 for a Fair Insurance Information Practices Act. That was passed many years ago, and even prior to electronic transfer of data, so that's why we want to make that comply as well. And then Section 2, Section 65A.12, Subdivision 2, by removing the language that requires appraisers under homeowners' policies to be, quote, residents of Minnesota. Other laws don't have this reference, so we believe this change merely clarifies an ambiguity in Minnesota law. I was hoping Senator Vandeveer would be here, but not. So that's basically in a nutshell.
Are you sure?
Well, but a lot of typically everybody in here has had to buy auto insurance, for example. And if you're old enough, it used to be primarily a written application. You'd go into the agent's office and do it that way. Well, it's changed dramatically since even the last 20 years. But most often, you'll find it's an electronic application, and we want to move some of those disclosures within the application. You still have to sign off in one form or the other, and so this basically modernizes this part of the statute. And I do have some testifiers as well.
Okay. Senator Gazelka, one quick question first. With regard to the appraisers being residents of Minnesota, they would have to be licensed in Minnesota. That doesn't change at all, does it?
That is correct, Mr. Chair. And, picture a border city. I mean, a lot of times the appraisers could be on one side or the other, but they absolutely have to be resident or licensed in Minnesota.
Okay, thank you. And let's hear from your testifiers.
Here's where we find peace in the valley.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. We support Senate File 590. Senator Gazelka is really, it's a relatively short bill. He's walked through the provisions of it. I guess maybe I just add that we periodically, for those that have been on the Commerce Committee, we'll flag statutes that have been around for a while and need to update, modernize, change them. I think Senate File 590 truly does that, as Senator Gazelka indicated, that, you know, many of these laws were written in the pre-electronic commerce era. We have passed other laws in Minnesota that deal with the same area. There's a Chapter 325L that deals with Uniform Electronic Transactions Act, and that's been on the books for 10 years. This really is, as Senator Gazelka said, kind of tuning up three areas of the law. The one dealing with appraisers, I think, is truly, it's a technical clarification, because there are other current laws that don't have the reference to residency, and this issue actually came up in a meeting that I had with some of the senior Commerce Department officials this past fall. So I think that one is a technical change, if you will. And I think the other two, again, serve the purpose, as Senator Gazelka said. I think the bottom line, we're not changing the substantive provisions in terms of the other consumer protections, the information that are in the statutes, but we're recognizing that let's have the laws in sync with how consumers actually want to do business in the state, and we think these changes do that. So I'd be happy, Mr. Chairman, to answer any questions.
Any questions from committee members for Mr. Johnson? Seeing none, then welcome Mr. Reich to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Reich, Director of Government Affairs for the Department of Commerce. We don't necessarily oppose the bill in concept. We have some very minor concerns that I've spoken with Mr. Johnson and Senator Gazelka about, and it's tweaking the language, I think, to accommodate some concerns that the folks in the insurance department have at the Department of Commerce. But I don't believe they're insurmountable, and we will continue to work on them with Mr. Johnson and Senator Gazelka as we move forward.
Mr. Reich, if I could ask, what area? I know this bill is going to judiciary and public safety because of the data practices angle on it. Are your concerns something within the jurisdiction of this committee, or do they deal with the data practices side for judiciary? Which are those small, insurmountable tweaking of language that you refer to? And the reason I'm asking the question is because I'd like to have that tweaked and done as in this committee and not just pass it off to the next committee, unless it's dealing with the data practice portion of judiciary.
Mr. Chair, I think that our concerns surround the nature of obtaining and given those words in there. And so I think it's a judiciary concern.
Which lines are we looking at?
There are the it starts on line 2.19. It says given or obtained, and that's repeated throughout the bill, and you're striking signed. And so there's a section of law 325L.08 that Mr. Johnson referenced that deals with electronic signatures and electronic signatures and how commerce is conducted, as Mr. Johnson had noted earlier, in present day. We have some issues with some of the language given or obtained, and it's not necessarily a commerce issue. These policies and new policies are being written and transacted via electronic form and over the phone today. We just want to make sure that consumers continue to, if they are given or obtained the contracts, that they in fact know what they're getting and are obtaining, I guess. So it's a judiciary concern, I would say, Mr. Chair.
I don't think so.
Okay, it's an arrest.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that's a judiciary concern. Why isn't it a concern of this committee? And Senator Gazelka, do you have any amendments that would address these concerns? Why don't we do it here? We've got another half an hour.
Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, we all came to the understanding that it wasn't completely the way we thought it was going to be this morning. And so I really wanted to give the two sides an opportunity to talk through where they were at. Part of the reason that we decided to have the bill heard today anyway is to recognize that there's a lot of other bills that are going to be heard coming up, and it was going to judiciary, and so that's why.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
No, this would be the second bill that we just passed along to judiciary to clean up for us. It seems to me that we should do the work of this committee in this committee, and I'm not going to move to to lay the bill on the table, but I would hope that Senator Gazelka would, in effect, do that himself and get the bill fixed here with regard to those issues. Data practices, yes, although we can deal with that as well, but we can let that go. But it seems to me that the term given or obtained as opposed to delivered is something that the Commerce Committee should be dealing with. And I would just suggest that without making a motion, that the chair ask Senator Gazelka to lay it over and let's come back to it.
Senator Rest, I hear what you're saying, and I'm the same feeling. So let's hear from a couple of the committee members. And Senator Scheid first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at 325L and seeing how that language is written and has to do with electronic transactions. And it's kind of obtuse language. I mean, it's awkward and it's a lot of words. It seems to me, frankly, this really is a judiciary discussion about given, delivered, and the validity of electronic signatures and authorizations. I suppose I can see we might discuss it here, but I think that also would be discussed in judiciary. So I don't want to get in an argument with
my friend.
Well,
Senator Scheid, if we solve the problem here, it probably wouldn't be discussed.
But it looks like it's kind of long language.
And Mr. Reich, you wanted to add something.
I think if I could, I think the issue that we have is surrounding the notice that the consumer gets. So I think it's a notice issue, which I think has traditionally been a judiciary issue. And so the consumer protections remain the same. The disclosures remain the same. The normal transaction of the policy remains the same. It's the notice by which the consumer is notified, I guess, or confirms the transaction. And so for that reason, I'd leave it up to the will of the committee, but that's where our concern lies.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Senator Rest.
So is the only reason this bill is here is because it's got the word insurance in it? I mean, what is the work of this committee?
Senator Rest, no, I hear you.
Mr. Chair, Section 2 is pure insurance.
Well, and there are other reasons. It also has the appraiser's language in it. But what I wanted to ask you, Senator Gazelka, you mentioned that you wanted the two sides to be able to figure out this minor discrepancy here. Are those two sides, the Department of Commerce, and they happen to both be at the table there now? So let me make a suggestion. What you think about this is I tend to agree with Senator Reston that I would like to do this work here in the committee, in the Commerce Committee, before we send it on to the judiciary. Is there any huge problem with if you can't figure it out in the next few minutes, if you don't think you can do that, then can we lay this over for one day and bring this up? I mean, tomorrow we're going to have a fun-filled day for sure. But doesn't mean we couldn't bring, if you were able to resolve this, if you think you could, with this simple language here, I mean, I don't think it's insurmountable that you could do this in the next 24 hours or 23 hours, and we could bring this up right at the beginning of the meeting tomorrow, and when you have figured it out, then this committee would feel comfortable in passing this work under judiciary. Is that acceptable to you?
Mr. Chair, you are full of wisdom, and I think that that's the right approach.
Okay. Well, we've heard the testimony today, so I think we understand the issue, and I don't think that there's opposition to the concept here. I think it's just a matter of getting the words right, and I agree with Senator Rest that we
should
deal
with
that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Gazelka. I appreciate that.
And with that, we'll lay over Senate File 590 until tomorrow. We'll do that. I don't think I need to have the gavel on that, do I? We're not tabling it. Okay, committee members, then we'll be done a few minutes early today, and tomorrow will be a spirited day, no doubt.
Spirited.
And we'll have some good discussion on the liquor sales on Sunday tomorrow. So please be on time because we're going to need the full time. We're going to want to start right away on that. So with that, members, the committee is adjourned. Saturday, so I-